you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 249 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. Today, my guest is Taylor Teeman. And Taylor is a small business and brand advocate attorney out of Los Angeles. And we're going to talk about her journey, how she found her niche, moving away from litigation and away from, you know, traditional law practice to more of a transactional practice in the small business community, addressing in particular folks who are doing business in the modern economy, fitness advocates, small restaurants, folks in the Latin community, of which she is an integral part of, and how they're in need of services to establish the legal underpinnings of their business and to protect their brand, their copyright, and their trademark. So it's a pretty interesting discussion. I learned a lot from it. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. And without any further delay, here is Taylor Teeman. Taylor Teeman, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about this.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on the program, Taylor. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So I'm basically a small business and trademark attorney here in Los Angeles, and I have a virtual law practice. I serve mostly California-based clients and have a couple or a handful outside of California with respect to some trademark matters, but I have my client base is pretty much here in LA. I went to University of Pennsylvania for undergrad, so I was out on the East Coast for a couple years, and then I came back to Southwestern Law School here in Los Angeles, and have been in a couple different law firms since graduating. I've been practicing for about, I think I had my 5-year anniversary the other day. And so, yeah, just been in a couple, bouncing around a couple different law firms and just trying to really figure out exactly what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be. And I think I finally landed where I know I'm supposed to be.
Good. Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, when you were with the other firms, what practice area were you in? Were you generally in business law or a litigation or what have you?
Mostly litigation. I always kind of intended on going into some form of entertainment or something transactional based, but the market here in LA for that is super competitive. So I came out of law school, went into this general civil litigation, mostly real estate business, with a smaller law firm in Pasadena, California. And then I moved into a consumer protection based role with another litigation firm in Los Angeles. I was doing a lot of consumer protection up until the point that I branched out to do my own thing.
Yeah. Now, so let's talk about that journey. I mean, right now you're a small business attorney and a trademark and brand advocate. Tell me how that those things kind of coalesced in your mind to be a viable way of offering legal services.
I never really gave up the need or want to be in transactional. I'm not really a fan of litigation. I tried it for a long time and I just never felt like that was where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm a reformed litigator, so I know that feeling.
Yeah, it takes a special type of person. So I continued to kind of hope that I would land either an entertainment or transactional position, and just nobody was willing to take on somebody that didn't have law firm experience. I had some clerk experience from while I was in law school, but that was about it. So I don't know if anybody was willing to take the risk on somebody who didn't have that transactional experience. It was just super frustrating.
Particularly in that very competitive LA market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Super. I mean, everywhere you turn around, there's, you know, an entertainment lawyer or agent or, you know, somebody in the business.
Yeah. I think it's also a lot of who you know too. And
well, sure.
Southwestern is a great school, but we also, you know, really, really awesome schools out here, USC, UCLA. So I think it was pretty competitive, but I almost gave up on trying to do transactional. I just was like, maybe I'm never going to get into it. And then I kind of, at the same time that I started working from home for my last law firm, I was able to kind of, you know, take care of myself and do more things that I was needing to do. And I started going back to Pilates very frequently. And my instructor and I became pretty close friends. And she just was kind of poking around asking some legal questions because she was opening up her studio. And along with helping her, I found that, you know, that was a place where I could go kind of back into that transactional, like, love for just literally paperwork and filing, and being able to kind of assist her with that. I felt like, you know, this is something I can do. And I started just poking around online and seeing what other attorneys were doing in that area, how they were marketing themselves, and if it was doable. And I saw that it was, so I just kind of took a chance on it.
It's really interesting because I think in terms of business, you know, we hear so often that small businesses are the lifeblood of the economy. Of course, right now, they're also the ones that are getting hammered the hardest during the pandemic. But that be it as it may, being a former small business owner myself, it's astonishing how many people go into business without the proper legal underpinnings. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really target-rich environment for you.
Yeah, and I particularly was noticing that because LA, we have a lot of Latinx business owners out here.
Sure.
I was noticing that a lot of them were getting either like in trouble with some of the things online, like social media, you'll see like fights over IP all the time, but they don't really know what they're fighting about, but that's what they're fighting about.
Sure.
I was noticing that they just didn't have the proper representation, and then getting even more into the weeds with it. There wasn't an education level there about really the necessity of legal and getting that in place. So I felt like that could be a perfect spot for me to be able to help, because I do, like, I've been shopping from some of these business owners and some of these marketplaces for a long time, but I never really was looking at it from the perspective of, you know, I'm able to help them with their legal too. So it's kind of taken a turn.
You know, that's a really interesting aspect of it too, because I tell people, boy, if you want to know what stocks to invest in on the stock market, just watch where my wife does her shopping. This is a perfect barometer for where people are spending their money. And, you know, it's kind of a similar concept. If you really want to know where you can help the most people, look where you're spending most of your time. Mm-hmm. And I think you had that revelation.
If
you just think about, for instance, just the fitness industry, and again, particularly there in SoCal, you know, when you talk about the Pilates classes, the yoga classes, the spin classes, and the personal trainers, and the boxing studios, and, you know, all those, you know, what I would say are not corporate entities, they're more mom and pop and solo practitioner type businesses. There's so many of them are just operating out of their own checkbook or wallet, and really are missing the boat in terms of what legal support they should have in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if you double that down with, say, small restaurants and you know, particularly in the Latin market, as you were noting, small construction companies, it's just an opportunity that's rife with possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of opportunity there. I think it's just about getting in front of the right people. Because even I was surprised that, you know, you can market a law firm on Instagram. Like, do people even take you seriously? And then I was doing some research, and there's a lot of attorneys that like solely use Instagram to market their firm.
Yep. You go where your clients are.
Yeah. So
if your clients are, let's say your client is a yoga instructor and they're marketing their business on Instagram, that's where you want to be. And I think that's what you're finding out. So tell us a little bit in terms of brand advocacy and the services that you offer, what are the kinds of things that folks are getting from you?
Mainly, we're just getting them set up structurally, because a lot of my clients are either just starting out or are about 1 to 2 years in, and they just want to get things set up. So a lot of, you know, LLC formation when necessary, getting licenses mm-hmm. and permits in place, stressing the importance of trademark, because I think that people don't really know what they're asking for, but they know what they need. So everybody's very concerned about names getting taken and things getting stolen. And then just making sure people have contracts in place. It still kind of blows my mind how many business owners, just for basic, you know, routine transactions, don't have a contract or don't have terms or anything in place.
Yeah, I mean, I had a personal experience just the other day with trying to hire a fencing contractor, and he literally gave me his estimate on the back of an envelope. So wrote it down and said, this is what I would charge. I'm like, dude, how do you stay in business if that? I mean, I know there's a certain kind of romantic kind of view and trust in the world that, you know, my handshake is my contract and my word is my promise. But you, as a business person, you can't do business that way.
I know, it's crazy. My fiance is in the music type industry, and they just don't really use contracts for anything.
Yeah.
So I'm just always like, what are you, like, what you're just paying what? And there's nothing in writing. Like, what is that?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, tell us also then a little bit about, I know that you work with small businesses in terms of making sure that their websites are legally compliant, as well as some of their other intellectual property. How does that work with your client base?
So we're usually getting in place just standard like privacy policy terms. A lot of my clients are e-commerce, so they're selling. They either have shops set up on their website, or they're working through a third-party platform.
Sure.
Or they have services that they're booking through their website. So it's really stressing the importance of getting all the things in place, especially if they're, you know, email subscribers are huge right now for being able to market to your customers. So getting all of that stuff in place and making sure and really stressing, you know, what happens if somebody asks for a refund and needs to cancel, and kind of hitting the pain points to get the businesses to understand, like, this is important, that we need to have this posted up somewhere and taken care of.
Did you get a lot of requests also to do, you know, contract or purchase order reviews?
I have a couple clients that are, they handle like wholesale, not necessarily larger purchase orders, but a lot of them are selling direct to customers, or they're handling wholesale. They're very, like, most of them are very, like, either just starting out, very unique products that they're selling. So we're usually at a level where we're trying to bring that transaction online to a more secure place. Because a lot of them just are trying to get things sold online, and like, people throw things up on a website and try and you know, make some money, which is fantastic, but we want to just make sure that they're protecting that transaction.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and is changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality, evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. Yeah, and you talk about those third-party platforms. I know a lot of folks who, and my daughter is an example of who sell things on a platform like Etsy, mm-hmm. and think, well, because I'm using their platform, everything is taken care of for me. I don't really need any legal mumbo jumbo on my website or behind my representation on the Etsy platform. I gather that's not sound theory.
Yeah, it's each platform kind of has their own version of you need to protect yourself or else we can't help you. So a lot of them are just like, you know, make sure you have terms up, make sure you have your policies up. I think there is a little bit of a disconnect with using a platform and thinking that it's the same as, you know, having your own website. Like,
yeah.
If you're using a third-party platform, you're agreeing to all of their terms. They don't have to have you on there. They can kick you off whenever they want to. And I think because they're so common and so many people use them and usually there's not problems, business owners are surprised when they get like their account frozen for some reason and they aren't receiving payments or they just get kicked off the platform entirely and they think it's unfair, but in reality, they're not following the rules of the platform, which is kind of hard to break to people.
Yeah, exactly. And they also kind of forget that, from my observation, that they're paying money to the platform. And so they need to make sure that they're getting what they need from it. And oftentimes, that means they have to do something themselves in order to make that a complete circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's not, but the platforms are great. And I don't think they're doing anything to like trick the business owners. I just think if you are a first-time business owner and just trying to sell things on the side, and don't really know how that works, I can see how it's very easy to feel that a platform like Etsy or something is going to protect you. But they quickly find out when there's an issue, like there's an issue and that platform is not going to be on your side if you don't have the right things posted.
Right. Right. So how do you go about billing your clients for this? Is this all flat fee or?
Yeah, I'm about 99% flat fee. Some of the tasks are hourly, but it's usually with like negotiations. But everything's pretty much flat fee. So LLC formation's flat fee, trademark applications are flat fee, contracts are flat fee, which I've never had to bill. I've never been in defense works. I've never really had to have that like billing headache that I know everybody complains about. I have billed just my time to be able to keep track of it, but I've never been under pressure to have a certain amount of hours. So I never wanted to have that sort of structure with hourly if I don't have to. And I just heard such good things about flat fee and it's worked out really great for me and my clients.
Now, I noticed on your website, you also have something of a subscription model, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the subscription model came about a couple months after I started the firm because I saw that that was another kind of emerging way to be able to help clients on a more consistent basis that would work out for both of us instead of me having to bill for every single project or task ahead of time. It was easier for me to be able to tell them like, look, if we just hop on the subscription, you can email me whenever you want. We'll have a phone call every month. And that's what you get monthly, and you have to pay a monthly fee versus, you know, if you want to set up a consultation every month, we have to book a new call. So the clients that I have that have more ongoing needs, I have suggested the subscription to them and they seem to like it.
And you branded that as the Legal Mega membership? Yeah.
Legal Mega membership.
Yeah, I really like that. And because I can see if you've got clients who are building their brand, building their business, and they expect to need your services for a couple, 3 years as they, you know, ramp up, a subscription model makes all the more sense than trying to, you know, buy a la carte.
Yeah, it's so much more convenient for both of us. I initially thought it was going to be more convenient for them and easier to sell, but
it's easier for you.
Yeah, it's so much easier for me too. So it's great.
One of the things that does is certainly evens out your cash flow and gives you a real predictable model of what you're going to be taking in on a month-to-month basis. You can forecast a lot easier.
Yeah, the inconsistency of monthly income was something I was never used to, and I'm pretty conservative. So the not knowing how much money was going to be made each month really made me nervous. So that was another plus side of the subscription model. You know, at least, you know, with X amount of clients, there's this minimum coming in.
Right. Now, do you use a payment platform to manage that as well?
I do. I use ClientRock for that subscription model. I use them for my consultations too, and they integrate with LawPay. Okay. Which is awesome. So I love them for that service.
So I'm familiar that LawPay has a subscription model built into its options. How does ClientRock, how does that dovetail with LawPay?
I think you just input the LawPay information. I had been using a different non-legal platform for the subscription. Mm-hmm. But the like fees and the ethics rules and all of that just made me super nervous. I wanted to have something that integrated with LawPay.
Sure.
I think that you literally just kind of input your LawPay information for ClientRock, and they integrate there, and then they bill the client monthly, and they have a way for you to, you know, start the fee agreement. Perfect. Initially. It's great.
So it sounds as if ClientRock is providing the front end to LawPay through an integration?
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot, like I don't ever really even have to touch LawPay unless I have to go into something specifically, but I have LawPay integrated with Clio. And then
that's going to be my next question. You are using a practice management platform, Clio.
Yes. I just started with Clio back in May, I think. And they're great. I had used them previously at a law firm like a couple of years ago. So I knew that they were good. It was a matter of, okay, now it's time to invest in it.
Right. Right. And you're happy with that?
Yeah. I really like Clio. It's
very simple. Aside from Clio and LawPay and Client Rock, are there any other tools that you rely on that our listeners might be interested in knowing about?
I have standard like Lexis Advance for research.
Okay.
And I've been just toying around with different programs specifically for trademarks. So I have tried Alt Legal. I have tried TMTKO for like searches and office actions and things like that. I'm definitely
These are specifically related to the trademark work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very trademark specific. So like Alt Legal, I know, will help you monitor all of your caseload for all your trademarks. And they send you updated reports daily or weekly, however you want to choose. And then TMTKO is another one specifically for trademarks. So they help you kind of monitor. They help you with office action research. So I'm kind of toying around with those. But just basic, the systems I use are Clio, Client Rock, and then LawPay for the payment processing.
I didn't realize that there was that much kind of research involved in the trademark and copywriting process. I mean, I know obviously that you have to make sure that somebody else doesn't hold the trademark or have a copyright to the material, the intellectual property that you're talking about. But I didn't realize that there was in the order of daily, weekly, monthly reporting in that respect.
Yeah, they have, there's a couple programs or I guess companies that offer assistance with searches. So you can go search a trademark on the register without buying anything. But I like to have that extra report to have something in front of me. There's other programs that help you monitor. Because there's ways to monitor your trademarks, but once you have a lot of them going, it's good to have a weekly email updating you with what's happening.
So is that in the case where, forgive my ignorance, where you're monitoring your client's trademark to make sure that nobody is inappropriately using it?
Yeah, there's ways okay. You can monitor. You can monitor to protect, and then you can also monitor the deadlines for applications that are either pending or maybe a registration needs a renewal. There's not too many, but there's a good amount of deadlines that come along the way with a trademark application that if you have enough applications pending, they could get lost in the shuffle. So it's good to have a monitoring system too. It's not anything to the extent of like civil lit deadlines. Right. Those are crazy. You need a monitoring system with like 5 cases. But it's something super helpful.
Interesting. And in terms of marketing, how are you advocating on your own behalf? How are you getting the word out about the services that you offer?
I've pretty much been using and leveraging Instagram for a really long time now. Okay. I do have a website, but I try to use Instagram and really engage with people on there because I noticed that most of my potential or target clients were using Instagram for their business needs. So why not hang out on there? And then, using either certain networking events or things like that to kind of get my out there.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's difficult in this pandemic era, and particularly, for you there in LA, where things are getting a little tight these days. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right about the Instagram, and it's funny because you'll hear a lot of attorneys, kind of look down their nose and say, I don't need an Instagram account. I mean, I have a LinkedIn account. That's about all the social media I need. Mm-hmm. But they're failing to recognize the point that you have noted, that in particular, your audience, your ideal client, that's where they're hanging out. That's where they're doing business. That's where they're communicating. And so you need to be right there with them. It wouldn't make any sense for you to spend a whole lot of time trying to market on LinkedIn because that's not where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I was talking to a friend that does, I think she does immigration, and she was kind of asking, like, you know, do you think I need to have a more intense Instagram presence? And I'm like, well, do you think your clients are coming to Instagram looking for that help? Like, maybe. So there's a level of like, you want to have the presence that people see you on there. And then there's also the next level of, are you investing all of your money and time marketing into that platform? I know it's different for different types of law.
Do you see yourself going into Instagram advertising at some point?
Like running actual ads?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've run, I don't know if I've run any ads. I've run, actually, yeah, I have run Instagram ads, but not for the legal services for some of the templates, but they're super helpful. If you know how to use them properly, I know there's a lot of people that they specialize in that, but if you know how to target properly, then they work.
Well, I think that's the absolute key is targeting. Since Instagram is owned by Facebook, they're so tightly woven together. I have to admit, I don't know a lot about Instagram. It's not a platform that I've been on. I have an account, but I don't really understand its appeal, but I'm not their target audience, so that makes sense. But yeah. I know for lots of folks, people who are younger and more those who have businesses such as you're seeking to attract, that's exactly where they are and where you should be as well.
Yeah. It's I like Instagram. It's fun.
Well, listen, Taylor, it's been wonderful having a moment to chat with you about your practice there in LA. Tell our audience, if they have anything they want to follow up with or reach out to you about, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Speaking of Instagram, I'm on all the time. So there are my emails. So my Instagram handle is Legalmiga, LegalMiga. And then my website is www.ttimanlaw.com.
Terrific. We'll have all of that on our show notes. And I want to, again, thank you for taking time to be with us today, Taylor, on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much. This is so fun.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.